Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
I appreciated something that Jenny said as she was leading us in worship, that she said that God is not angry with us, and that was the kind of the main content of the message last week. And so today, I want to address a couple of questions. First one is, if God is not angry with us, then why is crucifixion, why is this whole Jesus dying on the cross thing a rescue for us? What's he rescuing us from, and how do we respond to that? We're in our current series, the Cross series, where we're looking at the crucifixion, the meaning of it from a whole bunch of different perspectives. And today the message is entitled Defeating Idolatry, and it's kind of the first half of what we're being rescued from. The second half will be next week. So if you're new or newer to Crosslands and you're looking to take next steps, there's one that I want to highlight this morning, and that is volunteering to serve. There's a lot of things that we do in our lives, and sometimes we wonder if we're even making a positive impact in the world. You know, you go to your job, you take your vacations, and you catch up on TV series, but what are you doing that actually makes a positive impact in the world other than putting out your recycling? And there are all kinds of ways that you can connect with us at Crosslands Church and be part of a mission to change the world. And so if that's something you want to look into, if you go into crosslands.live on your smart device, there's a box that it says volunteer to serve. It's pretty self-explanatory, and we can help fit you in something that matches your personality, your passion, your gift set and skill set to be part of the mission of Crosslands Church here in Newmarket at Crosslands Church, which I've already said. Okay, so we're going to jump into our message. We do have message notes available on crosslands.live as well. If you go to, I think, Sunday morning message, there's a box there, and there's a relevant relevant text for today. There's a brilliant quote in there that I couldn't fit into the message, and there's where do we go from here thoughts. How do I apply this on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? Those are great questions to go through with family members or a small group or friends or by yourself. And we should have time at the end if we have any text messages. We'll take text messages. If you have a comment or question relevant to the message today, my number's up on the screen. You just text me, and away we go, if we have time. If not, we take the really good ones and we put them on the Facebook page, so you can always look up that as well. The message usually goes up on a Tuesday morning or a Wednesday morning or something. Anybody know this past Wednesday was McHappy Day? A few people. Other people are going, oh, I missed it. How could I miss that? It's a very important day of the year. No, I really actually appreciate that what they do with that. They take the funds and they support Ronald McDonald House, which is a really, really valuable resource in our community, especially for people that have long stays. I know we've had people in our church stay there because they've had sick kids in a hospital in Toronto, and it was a great resource for them. It's a great thing they do. And so in order to support that, this past week, I went to McDonald's. I decided I'm going to forego real food and get McDonald's for once, right? And I know I trash McDonald's a lot, whatever. I think they just have that right quantity of sugar and salt that keeps you coming back for more. Not healthy. I don't know what other nutrients are in there, but whatever. Here's my dose. And I've mentioned this before, like they have these things called burgers. I'm not even sure it's real meat on there. It's kind of gray in color. I think in some level of honesty, they stopped calling certain things burgers. A Big Mac is a sandwich, not a burger. So whatever. But you know, it's easy, it's cheap, and it's addictive. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today is there's things in our life that are cheap, easy, and addictive, and so they can take the place of the real thing. I want to jump into the text for this morning, which is Romans. From the very beginning, the first chapter of this letter that Paul wrote to the early church, and throughout that book, he talks about the basic human problem and what God has done about it. And the basic problem isn't always what we think it is. So I'm going to read from Romans 1, 21 to 23. I think it's on the screen. It says, yes, they knew God, but they wouldn't worship him as God or even give him thanks. And they began to think up foolish ideas of what God was like. As a result, their minds became dark and confused. Claiming to be wise, they instead became utter fools. Instead of worshiping the glorious, ever-living God, they worshiped idols made to look like mere people and birds and animals and reptiles. Who are the they here? He talks about it a little bit earlier. He says, you know, he's describing all sinful, wicked people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. And the problem is not moral fault or sin or wrongdoing or whatever. The problem is removing from God the worship that's due him and worshiping something else. And there's all kinds of problems with that. And that's what we call idolatry. It's the It's a diversion from our original calling and identity. That when mankind is created by God, God creates man to be in his image. And that speaks to both identity, who you are, and vocation, what you do. And diverting your attention from God onto something else, it breaks that intention. It breaks that identity. What's an idol? I mean, we don't do this in our culture. We just don't. I mean, it used to be a lot more obvious back in the day, you know, what you worship as statue or whatever the statue represents. But it's a lot more subtle in our culture today because an idol is what is your highest ideal? Carl Jung, this famous psychologist, was quoted as saying, your highest ideal is God. And I think that that's true in a sense because your highest ideal is God to you. That is your God, whatever your highest ideal is. Your target fulfillment for fulfillment, your point of life. What do you aim for? What are you aiming for? Because your aim actually determines what you see. And that's actually, it's true. We're inundated with information. In fact, just the very visual information your brain takes in is too much for your brain to handle. And so you have these mental models that you construct. We don't do this consciously. It's a lens of understanding the world that what we take in is fit into preconceived ideas. And part of that is determined by what you aim for. It limits your perspective. We would need to do that or we would go insane. But what you aim for governs you, it guides you, it informs your goals, your decisions, your values, and your aspirations. There's something that I'm aiming for, and everything else in my life fits into that aim. It's true biologically, it's true conceptually, psychologically. And what we aim for can be good or it can be bad. You know, some bad things. Some people aim for video games. It's all they do. That's their target. You spend your money on better systems, and you spend all your time playing them. And some people have chemical addictions. Some people are addicted to work. We call that workaholism, which I don't get, because alcoholism is addicted to alcohol, so workaholism should be addiction to workahol. Yeah, I think weird like that. Okay, that's just me. But there's good things, too, that people aim for. People aim for a good reputation. People aim for pleasure. Pleasure is not inherently bad, and sometimes I wonder if people are actually aiming for pleasure or they're aiming for an absence of pain, which is not quite the same thing. People aim for career and work. People aim for family. I mean, a healthy family is a good thing. And people can make that their sole target, their sole aspiration. That's where I'll be fulfilled. And they make their spouse, finding the right person or taking the person they've already found and they're stuck with into the right person, trying to make them into the right person because that's where they're going to find fulfillment. And I find that's less true today. I find more and more people are doing that to their kids. Kids are the center of the family. It's almost like, you know, all of my failures and aspirations I didn't manage to make true, I can live vicariously through my kids. Religious practice, you know, I read my Bible and pray every day, and that's where I will find my fulfillment. Go to church. Maybe even your preconceived idea of who God is, it's an idea in your head that can't change because you've established that this is who the true God is, and that's never going to change. The problem is that sometimes our highest ideal is, well, it's always a problem. If your ideal isn't high enough, it limits you. If your ideal is too small, if you have a God, an ideal, something you're pursuing that isn't the God, isn't the highest of being, then that's what the Bible would say is an idol, regardless of whether it's represented by a physical, tangible object. It's an idol. It's less than God, and that's what you're aiming for. In our culture, some people have pointed out that we have like an ungodly trinity, money, sex, and power. That's what people pursue. And I think that there's a pantheon of sub-deities. There are all these other things, and some of the things are what I mentioned above, good, bad, all these things that we pursue, pleasure, entertainment, we pursue those things. We give it our time, we give it our energy because we think that in that we're going to find fulfillment. So what the Bible says is that behind those things is actually a dark power, a demonic power that traps us. How does that work? How does idolatry work? The first thing is it deceives us into believing and putting trust in something that isn't God. I trust this. I trust either a false image of God or something that's not God, and this is what I'm spending my life pursuing. So that's the first thing. There's a deceit there. The second thing is that it dehumanizes us. It limits us, and you might go, that doesn't make any sense. Okay, well, let me just flesh that out a little bit. So if we're originally created to be the image of God, to be in that relationship with God, to find our identity in Him, find our fulfillment of Him, in Him, that's what we're for. That's where we find our fulfillment. And when you aim for less than that, the Bible says you become what you worship. Okay, it's subtle. Isaiah 44, there's a chapter in there that mockingly talks about the creation of idols. You know, people, you know, cut a tree down and create an idol out of it. And at the end of that sort of mockery, it talks about how impotent these gods are that people worship. And at the end, they become like them, blind, deaf, dumb. And you become like what you worship. You become an expression of that. And here's how, because the next thing is that idolatry reduces everything and everyone around you to its own categories. So for example, if you pursue money, here's the means for fulfillment in life. Accumulate more money. I've heard stories of reporters interviewing some of the world's wealthiest people and saying, you know, you got $46.5 billion. Is that enough? Wait, what's enough? How much more money do you need? And more than one person has responded, just one more dollar. It's never enough. I got to pursue that and pursue that. But if that's your aspiration, if that's where you find fulfillment, then everyone around you and everything around you becomes either a means to more money or an impediment to more money. You define them in terms of how much money they can get you. That's really small. That you're reducing people to objects to be used, to leverage for more money or to reduce for more money. If your aspiration is sexual pleasure, you evaluate everybody around you as a sexual target. You rate them. You know, you have that, you know, 1 to 10 thing. I know there's people here that know what I'm talking about. You look at someone, you immediately go, where are they on the scale? Because your ideal for fulfillment is that, and you reduce that person as an object for your, as a potential object for your fulfillment. It reduces everything to its own category, to its own criteria for success. The next thing it does, this would be the fourth thing, is it loads false expectations. It can load false expectations. If your spouse or your potential spouse is your means for fulfillment, that is a burden he or she cannot carry. If your children are your means for fulfillment, that's a burden he or she cannot carry. And we do that to our kids. You know, our kids fail, or we compare them to everybody else's kids. Or we put all kinds of pressures and expectations on them. You have them in, like, you know, hockey and piano lessons and this and that and that and that, because they have to do these things to succeed, because if they succeed, then I succeed. You see where that goes? And our kids are falling apart with depression and anxiety. We wonder why. Because we're putting a burden, we're making them an idol. And that's not what they're made for. Finally, idolatry traps us in that limited reality, because we don't know that we're in it. It's almost like if I were to wear glasses that were tinted red, do you know what I would see? Red. Everything looks red. I'm blinded to the rest of the spectrum. And so your aim determines what and how you see, and it can limit you to not see anything beyond that. If your aim is too low, it traps you, because you're stuck. You can't even see beyond that. In 7 weeks, the New York Mets, it's a baseball team, will hand over a check to 56-year-old third baseman Bobby Bonilla. A check for $1,193,248. They're going to do that on July 1st, and they do that every year. Bobby Bonilla last played for the New York Mets in 1999. Anybody here remember Y2K? Bobby Bonilla has not played for the Mets since before Y2K. So in 1999, he's playing for the Mets. They said, we don't want you to play for us anymore. And he says, too bad. So they had to buy him out of his contractors. They owed him $5.9 million for the year. But they made a deal. In order to, we don't want to pay you this money, so let's defer the payment till later. So what we're willing to do, we'll cut a deal that we will start paying you in 2011, 12 years later. And we'll pay off that money over time at 8% interest, which means that he gets a check for almost $2 million, which started in 2011, every year, July 1st, and they will have paid him out by the end of 2035. That's a total of almost $30 million, which is more than the entire original contract. But they're stuck with that because it seemed like a really good idea at the time. So every year, the team owners and all that other stuff, they get together, okay, we got a salary, we got to choose our players that are going to make the team. Oh, but we have to keep almost $2 million aside every single year to pay this guy who will be 73 by the time that agreement is completed. Okay, that's what idolatry does to us, because we find ourselves trapped in something. We find ourselves almost in the position of the Mets. I owe my time, my money, my energy to this thing I'm pursuing, and I don't see a way out of it. Because it traps us with a false promise. You want to be fulfilled? You want the good life? You want to be the best that you can be? Here's how you do it, and it presents you an alternative from your best. This is what you want. This is what you need. This is what will fulfill you. This is what defines you, but it can't deliver. And it leads you into servitude, into bondage, into your life is wrapped up with this thing that you are serving that doesn't serve you. I heard a story recently of a kid that said, for years, I played video games with my older brother. And after years of playing video games with him, I found out that my controller wasn't attached. That's betrayal. And that's what idolatry does to you. You find out it can't deliver what you thought was happening, what you thought was coming to you is not going to work, and hopefully you don't find that out too late. The theologian N.T. Wright made the following quote, and I have it on the screen, I think. It says, our sin becomes the chain with which the idols we have worshipped hold us in their grip. See, the problem is less about the things we do wrong and our imperfections, less about that. That's what keeps us in idolatry, not worshiping and aiming for and finding fulfillment in God, but something less than God. It's our sin, that imperfection, not hitting the target, being less than our ideal, and actually sometimes doing things wrong, that's a symptom. It's an expression of the root problem, which is idolatry. And it's also the means of perpetuating that problem, because when you're stuck in that, you keep pursuing the idol to deal with the inner angst of not reaching your potential or being less than perfect or the failures that you carry with you. And you keep pursuing those things. It keeps you trapped. So what's the solution? Well, there's two parts to it. The first is the bad news, and there's the good news. The bad news starts in Romans 1:24. I'm going to have little snippets from this passage on the screen. It says, you know, as a result of this idolatry, God abandoned them to do whatever shameful things their hearts desired. Two verses later, God abandoned them to their shameful desires. And then two verses later, he abandoned them to their foolish thinking. So he lets people do what they want. He lets them become overcome by desires, and it actually clouds their thinking. The word abandoned there is the original language is a word that is all the way through the New Testament, but it's translated, it can be translated a lot of different ways. And the original word is something like handed over. So this past week, Pastor Claudette and I, we went over to the Newmarket Food Pantry and we handed over a check in the amount of the money that was raised at the Good Friday service. So that would be the same word here, handed over. It's almost like God hands us over to what we choose. It can be translated betrayed. It can be translated delivered. It can be translated gave up, gave over, committed to. God hands us over. And God giving us over to what we choose is an expression of his judgment. There's a very fine line between natural consequence in God's judgment. And there may be no line. I'm not actually sure about that. We'll talk about it more next week. But basically, God says, I'm allowing you to choose what you want. And I believe that's true individually. Each one of us, God says, okay, that's what you want? Okay, I will let you have it and you reap the consequences. But I believe it's also true of us as a culture, as a society. God lets us make corporate decisions that lead us down a path where we will inevitably reap the results unless something changes. And what happens is God is allowing you to choose your judge. If you live for money at the end of the life, your life will be evaluated at a certain point by money, which is a really, really bad judge. It's a really, really bad way to be measured. What you give yourself to will be the means by which you are judged. The Bible says, if you live by the sword, you will die by the sword. What you strive for will be the means by which you are judged. And again, we'll talk more about God's judgment and how God brings justice. But in a sense, God gives us over to what we choose. If we continually and sometimes stubbornly continue to choose the same thing over and over and over, God says, okay, that's what you choose. So what's the result? How do we get past that blindness? How do we get past that being stuck in a trap of what we've chosen? Well, God is the great table turner. He's the God of the great reversal. And so what you see is God leveraging this handing over in order to get at the root of the problem and break it from the inside. So when Judas betrays Jesus, you know what the language there is? Judas handed over Jesus. Jesus comes to be the full articulation of what it means to be human, the person who understands and lives out his identity as child of God and lives out his vocation in faithfulness to God. Judas hands him over, betrays him. He betrays him, he hands him over to the Jewish leaders. The Jewish leaders hand him over, same language again, to the Romans, to Pilate, the governor. Pilate hands him over to the people that will crucify him. Jesus is consistently handed over, being judged by the very worst of the world, by the idolatry of the world itself. And ultimately, this is God's plan. God is actually handing over, giving Jesus in rescue, as a rescue plan for us. We fairly regularly do communion here together at Crossland's Church, and a lot of times we'll use, there's one passage that's kind of typical and traditional. There's a few you can, but we typically go with the one in Paul's letter to the church in Corinth in Corinthians, and he says, he describes starting that communion thing on the night he was betrayed, but the words there are on the night he was handed over, and I'm not convinced that he's talking about Judas. On the night Jesus was handed over for our sake, and that's the context of the crucifixion. He's handed over. Jesus is the faithful one. God created humanity to be faithful to him, true to him, trusting him, trustworthy. And he called Israel to be his chosen people, to be true, to be faithful. And they continually revealed themselves to be faithless, untrustworthy, until God handed them over to the natural results of that. They went in exile, that was all broken. And Jesus comes in the scene. He's the one who remains faithful, no compromise to the Father. He's handed over to defeat idolatry from the inside. Almost like in faithfulness to God, he says, okay, do your worst. And all the forces of evil, all the worst that the world has to offer, expends itself against him like a wave crashing against a rock that cannot move. And through his crucifixion, he breaks its power. Romans 6 talks about that later in the same book, talks about that we have become free. We're not under any obligation anymore to the former things. I like the way Paul says it in his letter to the Colossians. He says, he disarmed the spiritual rulers and authorities. He shamed them publicly by his victory over them on the cross. He delegitimizes idolatry through his faithfulness, through his faithful death, and through his resurrection. He reveals the ultimate impotence of idolatry, and he undermines its power. There's that Passover liberation concept. We are no longer under the power of idolatry, or we no longer have to be under the power of idolatry. I don't know if you've ever heard the story, you probably have, of a man who is at the circus and he sees this gigantic elephant and it's tied outside a tent and it's got a flimsy little rope tied to a peg in the ground. And he asks the elephant keeper, how do you keep that elephant from running away? Like, that rope, he could snap that rope easy. And the elephant keeper says, yeah, he could snap that rope. And he says, well, why didn't he run away? He says, because we tied that rope around his foot when he was a baby elephant, when he couldn't snap the rope. But he's never come to realize that he has grown, and the rope couldn't hold him if he were to break it. So he's tied by something that really couldn't hold him if he chose to break it. And so that's like where we are. When we put our aim too low, we find ourselves trapped, pursuing something, aiming for something, but rescue is available because of Jesus' crucifixion. We are invited to break away from that. In fact, we're more than invited. We're called to break away from that. Stop living too small. Stop living too small. We're called to reject our idols for the sake of the true God, to strive again for being that image of God in true identity, child of God, and true vocation, furthering his kingdom in the world. To demonstrate faithfulness and faith in the faithful one, the Messiah who was crucified on our behalf. Here's a quote. It's from a guy named Alan Hirsch, wrote a book called Untamed. In fact, it's actually from that book. It says, if God is not the defining center of our faith, life, and identity, then who or what is? This is a question that should disturb each and every one of us. This is particularly true considering the fact that we are compulsive idolaters and rebels who, rather than taking our cues from a God who demands our all, seek to fit reality into something far more convenient and self-referential. That's a really challenging quote. And you're here this morning and, you know, maybe you're part of our community here at Crossland Church, or maybe you got suckered into coming because it's your mother's church and you're stuck here at least for another 15 minutes or something like that. But whoever you are, whatever your reason for being here, I know that you want what's best for you. You want what's best. No, nobody says, let me live a life that sucks. Let me aim low. Nobody actually thinks that. We want what's best. You want what's best for you. You want what's best for your family. You want what's best for your community. My question is, are you aiming high enough? Are your aspirations high enough? Will achieving the goals that you've set before you, whether consciously or unconsciously, will they actually fulfill your deepest needs and desires? What is that thing that you're living for? Is it something you know consciously, or are you just kind of going the path of least resistance, what your culture tells you to aim for? Maybe you've added God to your life in service to an inferior agenda, or is he at the center? Are you trapped in a bad deal, like the Mets? Or are you living in God's freedom? Are you serving a God of your own imagination? Or are you allowing God to continually reveal himself to you, an infinite God that our minds on our own can't comprehend? Are you allowing him to update your conception of him? How do you break out of this? Well, you renounce it. I will not serve anything less than God himself. You say it out loud, write it down. You renounce idolatry and you recommit to Jesus. This is not just are you a Christian or you're not a Christian, you're going to heaven or you're not going to heaven. Because when Paul writes to the people in the New Testament, he says to the followers of Jesus, he says, flee from idolatry. Anyone can potentially fall into this trap. It sneaks up on you. Traps are not labeled, this is a trap. Okay, we get stuck in this. It limits us. It compromises our calling. And we're called to live the best life we can with Jesus at the center. Maybe you're here today and you say, like, I'm not sure, but I know this, that I know I've never put Jesus at the center. I know I've never had God as my highest aspiration, and I want to do that. How do I do that? How do I start this whole new life, this spiritual journey? And I want to give you an invitation this morning to make that choice. And it's as simple as ABC. It's not an easy life. It's not an easy choice. But it starts simple. It's as simple as A, admit. My aspirations are too low. My goals are too low. I'm not living high enough. I don't want to continue to be trapped by insubordination to something that limits me and limits my perspective of other people and keeps me low. I admit that I need God and the better life, the best life I could possibly live. That's A. B is believe, which is more trust than just hold an opinion. I trust that God is a better life for me. I trust that through Jesus' death and resurrection, that's made available to me. And then three, or C actually, you have to commit. You have to make a change. You have to say no to the old life and start pursuing that new life. And this is what we do together here at Crossings Church on our Sunday morning services, in our small groups, and in the ministries that we have. Commit to that life, commit to Him, commit to the community, and you have to do something. And I think you have to do something physically. You have to do something to make that first step. And the best option that we have for you, I mean, you could just tell somebody here and say, I want to start this. But if you go into crossings.live, there's a box that says, I want to follow Jesus. Click that box, fill in your contact information, and we'll help you. This is the starting point for a whole new life, a whole new journey. We have no text messages. It's 12:15, so I'm going to invite you to stand, and we're going to close the service. Now, as soon as the service is done, we turn Theater One into prayer room. And I would, you know, there are people here that need to take an inventory. You need to sit down and say, what actually is at the center of my life? Have I allowed something to take God's place? Or maybe I've never actually had God at the center. I've had Him as like an add-on. He's a piece of the pie, but He's not the center of the pie. And there are people here that you need to do that. You need to make that switch. And I would encourage you to spend some time here as Wade creates an atmosphere here for us to engage with God. We always encourage everyone to welcome one another, to be in relationship with one another, engage with one another, find one person you've never met before, have a meaningful conversation with them, not just, hi, how are you? Just ask you to do that in the lobby. There'll be serving coffee and tea still out there. So that the people that want to stay in here can stay and engage with God and make right what is at the center of your life. You're not made to live low. You are not created to live in subjugation to ideals and aspirations and goals and visions that are just way too small. Let me pray for you. Father, I thank you of your incredible love. I thank you that you love us even when we don't recognize it, want it, or pursue it. I thank you that we don't have to perform to earn your love. But I also thank you that you have called us to live better and you have given us the means to do so. Father, I pray for freedom this morning. I pray for a correction of priorities this morning. Father, I pray that you would break the power of the need for wealth and pleasure and self-service. And you would allow us to see the potential of living completely for you, putting you at the center, finding our identity and fulfillment in you. Father, I pray that you would make that a reality in each one of our lives today, in this coming week and from now on. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.